We're back with Tacky Talk, folks, with State Representative Tacky Jane of Quincy here on Halloween. Tacky, I thought you'd have a costume on today.
Oh, well, perhaps this is my costume show.
Oh, you're going as a state representative.
Yeah, might as well. Some of you may be aware, I do have my Screen Actors Guild card still. I still pay my dues, even though I have not been acting very much. The schedule makes it very difficult. I do miss being on a set. As a funny joke, since we're on to this topic, I created for myself. I remember being in the AG's office, and my boss at the time was Jed Nozo, and the ratepayer advocacy office, which you all know, probably remembers utilities. It's easy to remember. And at one point, I was just giving some lip, and I screamed out a hallway. I only play a lawyer on TV, not in real life. And Jed screams back, "Stop saying things like that."
I'm not Perry Mason.
So when I was in the AG's office, I did have a little entertainment at my boss's expense every so often. Although, yeah, I did. Jed knows it was extremely kind to me, despite my every so often of mischief.
Hey, listen, it's important to have a little levity sometimes to get through the
I can be a little bit fun, or I might have a big mouth every so often.
day. So what is the Chan household giving out for trick-or-treats tonight?
The neighborhood has changed again. There's actually very little children in the neighborhood. It's again, living here pretty much entire adult life, actually my entire life, since 1978. One thing I've always learned is that the cycle of children rotating your neighborhood as they get older, and obviously trick-or-treating becomes less interesting. So I'm not quite out of the cycle, but Middlebrook Road is like the last street on the marsh. It's not a heavily transverse street. So unless you have children directly adjacent to you, the odds of trick-or-treaters aren't going to happen.
Well, it depends on what you give out. If you said rolls of 50s.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I could put flyers out of people's doors, come get some money. That would give attraction.
Oh, funny story. From my childhood, I'll tell you, there was this house that we used to go to where a lady would give out rolls of pennies, and that was a very popular house.
I would think so. I mean, money is money.
That's right. There were multiple trips to that house from all the youngsters.
You don't have to check for any dangerous items in the pennies.
That too. But yeah, to your point, I think you're right. Trick-or-treating is not what it used to be when we were young.
No, I mean, I didn't trick or treat too often. I was not a big Halloween fan as a child. But I mean, neighbors' kids have grown up. They've moved out. The neighbors next door are apartments. They used to be family apartments when I was a kid. I mean, I played with all the kids next door in the apartments. There are four unit apartments where I lived. There's a row of three of them down the street, but they were all family apartments. They weren't transient, which is what they are now. They're
Yeah.
basically single folks staying here for a year, maybe 2 years. With the close of Eastern Nazarene College, we used to have a lot of young couples, very young couples that are completing a master's degree at Eastern Nazarene, and I always could tell, when it's time to move out, when I see baby carriages move in.
Right. That's you start to feel old when you see generations like it's come to your door.
Yeah, it's more. We don't. When this isn't Austin Brighton where I live, but September is when I see moving trucks.
Yes. Well, why don't we call this the election show? Because we're recording this the Thursday before the November 5th election.
Yeah, it is our last chat before the election, and we were just talking before we started. Elected officials and other guests come on to QA TV, whether it be live or pre-recorded, to talk about the elections as it kind of unrolls through the course of the day. And I encourage folks to watch QA TV, and hopefully the clerk's office gets you the numbers quickly so you can get out earlier.
Yes, you read my mind, hey? Interestingly, I just spoke with the city clerk before we went on today, and so far they've already tabulated 13,000 ballots between mail-in and early voting, and they've still got 5,000 more mail-in ballots that are out that have not been returned yet. So a lot of people taking advantage of that.
Seems like it's consistent with the statewide numbers of just under 25%. Because what there's about, let's see, 103,000 people in the city, give or take. We have about 70,000 registered voters in Quincy, give or take.
Yes.
About just under 20,000 against 70,000. Yeah, so it's fairly consistent with statewide numbers.
It is, yeah. It's
My
not
mother
as
voted. My mother voted early, so
okay, yeah.
she didn't feel, she wasn't sure she was going to be up or feeling good for November,
Yeah.
and there was nothing going to change her mind really on her ballot, so she felt comfortable doing that. I'll be voting in person because I like to check the tallies when I'm there. Generally like a midday tally to see what the numbers look like.
Yeah. It's as I understand, not quite as robust as back in 2020, simply because that was the height of the pandemic at that point.
Yeah, during the obviously during the pandemic, there was a lot of concerns about actually voting in person.
Right.
Those who live in towns, had to deal with town meeting in the months of April in the height of pandemic,
That's right.
April, May, and into June, where they had a special protocol because they had no mail-in ballots available for those town meetings. We're trying to get people to safely vote in the midst of we don't know what's really going on still.
Right. Yeah. Some of them were held outside in football fields. Yeah.
I mean, again, we live in a city, so we don't really understand, town meeting dynamics. But yeah, it really, 2020 really changed and really forced town government to pivot quickly, how to follow through on the town charters and the town warrants, which they still had to comply with during COVID. I mean, we didn't, it was the emergency order didn't suspend people's town charters.
Right, exactly, yeah. So let's take a look at the national election and primarily the presidential election. There, people tell me we don't have any choices. There is actually a very stark choice this year.
Well, it's a little bit interesting this year because the number of battleground states have greatly expanded. I mean, we used to talk about basically four or less. Now we're looking to talk about eight. Maybe if you really want to get into it, a congressional district in Maine, for example, is actually a turn congressional district, right? So it's eight plus some random situations in Colorado and Maine in particular regarding specific congressional districts that it has one electoral vote because states have allowed to subdivide those electoral votes. And for the first time in a while, New Hampshire has not been in the conversation
Right.
as being a swing state. I don't even know what people think New Hampshire is going to be, but it sounds like it's going to maintain its Democratic congressional delegation. And the governor's race is extremely hot and heavy. If
Yes.
you watch local TV, you can see the commercials on the 6 o'clock news time zone, the 6 to 7 time zone. And wow, this is kind of special kind of advertising. The attack ads are just peculiar at a certain point. I'm just like, oh, this is getting kind of wild.
Primarily around the issues of taxes and abortion up there.
Well, it's a thing that's polling best on a national level. I still believe all politics is local. We've done our own polling through the speaker's PAC. The speaker has an independent PAC of his own. So, a lot of the issues that you see on a national level does also affect us at local level, but also things like infrastructure is very high on our polling list on the local level too. Education funding, education curriculum, education funding is a priority. And also the housing shortage is on the priority list as well.
Certainly, yeah.
So certain things, believe it or not, transparency is at the bottom of the list. It used to be top. People think transparency is a big public opinion move. It's actually not anymore. The economy and quality of life is very much on the top of people's minds based on our independent polling. Yeah, we did hire an independent consultant, so the speaker did. I think there's a little context here. So the House, the Senate, Democratic and Republican caucuses have their own PACs. They can use those PACs to hire things like consultants to do polling specifically for our individual branches regarding important matters of the day to the public.
Oh, I didn't know that. Who pays for those, Jackie?
It was a PAC, so they have to solicit independent donations under state campaign finance law to pay
Gotcha.
them. So, since they're political action committees, and that's how we do our own independent polling. And so do the Republican parties too. They see their own polls, and of course, the both Republican and Democrat candidates will craft their campaigns around local issues and local polling, which also includes regional polling on a county level. So, you know, the Berkshires has a different results than you would get in the Cape, for example.
I see.
So if you're a Cape candidate, you would change your campaign. If you're a Democrat or Republican, you're probably going to be running similar campaigns, believe it or not, because I'm doubtful the polling shows much difference between the two political parties.
Sure.
But, you know, be crafted towards the county you live in.
Interesting. I never knew that actually. That's interesting.
It's actually a fairly new phenomenon.
Oh, okay.
Speaker Mariano has really committed to getting us the best possible information going into election cycles. What is the public thinking? So they do multiple polling and do comparisons of pollings from a year ago, from 2 years ago, from 3 years ago, to see the shift in trends. And while you have all these advocates and talking heads and people on Facebook and people on TikTok and other social media sites, you know, folk nothing beats focus groups and regionalized polling, like a really small, narrow geographic zones, to get you really a better sense of what's going on. Actually, I prefer to do more focus groups. I think folks are much more better because they give you feedback, and sometimes people, as part of feedback, can give you kind of a mixed review feedback.
I see what you mean, as opposed to just checking off a box.
Agreed. And you can actually have like a conversation with the focus group leaders to find out what's going on. So yeah, we're not like, you know, national level politics. We do very much focus on local politics and, you know, what is on top of people's minds. It's largely driven by, yes, abortion, and it's a very pro choice state, surprising in the polling. And people think that it's not, but it really is. And then, you know, infrastructure and education funding, oh, very close behind those. And housing's up there too, but education funding and housing just kind of almost the same. But, you know, everyone knows that's on the top of everyone's minds. I mean, things like, you know, public safety and that stuff, people don't feel the state's very dangerous overall, despite, you know, all these Republican ads saying that, you know, this whole place is descending into a crime-ridden 70s style dystopia. You know, in major cities. That's actually not the case in Massachusetts.
Well, I like to say all the time that, I mean, you can find anything you're looking for, if you specifically go looking for. So if you go online or something and just do search for crime in Massachusetts, you're gonna get a distorted view. So you can find whatever you're looking for.
Well, and also, news on crime in the state is such a rare occurrence that when it does pop on the news is rather shocking.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, I mean, we have some high profile cases, certainly, but when it gets down to the local neighborhood level, it's pretty safe.
Yeah, I mean, like there was a stabbing of a child in Fitchburg, and the news in a high school, which was, you know, was quite shocking. Violent crime in schools were not very high. I mean, there's been issues of racism and anti-Semitism and other instances of hazing and bullying in schools. You may have read in or heard in news over the years in various school districts, but, you know, very rarely do you hear actual stabbings and shootings. But, you know, we're very thankful to live in a part of the country that is relatively very safe.
We'd finish that thought actually, which is good because I wanted to ask you, can you explain the Electoral College, Jackie, for folks? I think it's still a mystery to a lot of people.
Yeah, you see a lot of videos out there regarding your vote doesn't count and things like that in presidential elections, and that's only half a truth. So the Electoral College was created as a compromise during the drafting of the Constitution between the states. And those who remember your history lessons, the northern states actually had a smaller population compared to the southern states if you include the African American slaves. And that's sadly how it came to the concept of two, three-fifths of a person for each slave in the South to create more equitable sized states in terms of population versus the North and the South. And also straight up racism, because if you considered slaves humans, full humans, then you run into some very moral quandaries about that, which is a huge was a huge debate between different states and state leaders at the time during the colonial era forming the Constitution. So, as one of the famous lines of John Adams is that he's always been afraid of what we call mob rule, right? He's afraid of mobs. And while they believe in democracy, they created what we have a democratic republic. It's a kind of a mixture between the Greek Republic's idea plus actually Native American confederacies. The United States is actually a mixture of ancient Greece, modern, well, at the time, parliamentary style England, and the concept of confederacies, because the concept of multiple countries, because that's what the states were, and some ways still are, multiple countries joined together for a common cause underneath one centralized government, trying to work out things together, is a confederacy, which is similar to what certain Native American states were doing. So the United States is actually a very unique political model because it draws from three different sources. By very educated and wealthy colonial leaders, let's call it what it is, right? I always tell folks it's a very strange revolution because it was led not by the downtrodden, it was led by the elite.
Yes, John Hancock was a very wealthy man, right? Yeah.
Yeah, they're all very wealthy, and some were
Sam
slave
Adams, another
owners.
one. Yeah.
Yep, some were plantation slave owners, and some were merchants. Some were
Right.
lawyers, and some were bankers. So I mean, people have a people who have means tend not to want to lose said means, and generally, a revolution against a government is a very quick way to lose those lifestyle luxuries that you've enjoyed. So why is that important? Well, it's because this was not just some random people putting it together. Founding fathers were very well educated, as they can tell, try to blend three types of political structures together to create a balancing act where all the states have equal say. And even the name of our country, the United States of America, reflects that there are independent states that join together to form what we refer to as America. And the founding fathers feared a strong central government at the federal level because each state at the time was fairly independent.
Right.
But they recognized certain things like we needed a common currency. 13 currencies made no sense.
Right.
13 tariffs made no sense against each other. We should have free trade of commerce. And many of the provisions were actually designed basically to create common defense and common currency and common trade and create a uniform structure in foreign affairs. Because you don't need 13 states with 13 treaties, in Europe, as opposed to one consolidated one for nation, which is ratified by the states, the U.S. Senate and Congress, because the U.S. Senate at the time was not elected by the people, it was appointed by the governors of each state.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
I think it was 1901 the Constitution changed to have them as elected.
I see.
So, as you can tell, the Congress actually was a balancing act. The House was elected by the public on 2-year terms. They considered it closest to the people based on population size. And then the Senate was elected by the states in equal number of each state, getting 2 senators apiece.
Yeah, which is
And
still the same today. Yeah.
which is the same because every state equal standing in the upper chamber to ensure the balance act between states' interest and the general public. And the presidency, election to presidency reflects that as well, because as I said at the beginning, because of the size of the populations, the Electoral College is based on the number of senators plus congresspeople. And since every state has equal number of senators, that puts everybody on equal footing. But the shift in population size would put in disadvantage small states versus large states' interests. And you're trying to form a nation, people, and you want all the states on board to form this nation.
Right.
And for them to actually form the nation, the small state interests needed to be helped satisfied. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a country.
They wouldn't, why would they agree to that, right? They wouldn't be equally represented.
Yeah, because they wouldn't have a voice
Right.
in the presidential component. The U.S. Senate solved some of that problem. Like, it guaranteed them 2 seats like everybody else in the states in the U.S. Senate, but they would lose out in the congressional area because of a smaller population.
Right.
And then the Electoral College is the next balancing act, and the Electoral College is intriguing because the ballot at the time of the first election didn't show George Washington's name, who was actually the only candidate for obvious reasons. And the only candidate had no political party. There was no political party for George Washington. He's the only president never to have a political party. And it would be electors, people who, at the local level, that you would vote for, that you would know and trust, representing the candidate. And those electors would go to DC after the ratification of votes by Congress to formally elect a president. And put it in perspective, folks, this would be the first election in the new nation. So you had a new president, a new Senate appointed by the governors, and then you had your first congressional sitting of the House.
Yeah.
So this very first election was very peculiar because you had no legislature.
Right.
You
Yeah.
had no executive branch. It is your, and then the states were running the elections because the Constitution gives states enormous control of elections. And you think about it, it makes perfect sense. You had no central government to run an election.
Right. Somebody had to do it, right?
Somebody had to do it.
Yeah.
So the individual states in the Constitution that was ratified gave them the ability to run elections, actually not 100% freely, but a lot of authority. And it makes sense when you think about the fact that there was no country. Who's going to run these elections?
Have to start somewhere.
Yep. And the tradition continues is that the states pay for these elections. It is not
Yes.
the federal government. It comes from day one of the founding of the country, right? So this is kind of this, funky balancing act that was crucial, as most other compromises of the Constitution, with
Yeah.
the first 13 states to come to some ability to balance the interests of people, but at the time, white male Protestant landowners, which of course over time we've expanded to many other folks, the right to vote, the balance of each individual state governors, right, and the state legislative bodies to have a say in the federal government, and of the interest of balancing act of each individual states as a whole regarding the election of the president.
Yeah.
And in the Electoral College actually creates actually a very curious thing, a scenario that will probably never happen. I mean, you've all seen the show, was a Designated Survivor.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, those scenarios were probably not envisioned by the founding fathers. But for example, let's say the election's over on November 5th. And let's say between November 5th and swearing in day and the first, I believe, Wednesday in January, both the presidential candidate elect and the vice president elect both get killed. And then what do you do? Right. And that leaves the Electoral College because they can do things independently of the general public vote because
Okay.
they're
All
the
right.
ones who make the final vote
Yeah,
cast
based on the results in that state.
in that state.
Okay.
So the tradition has always been that you vote with the state number. So your state goes Democrat, the Electoral College goes Democrat.
Yeah.
But there is actual recordings of some electors voting for another person or boycott the vote. But generally, it's always one or two people, and it doesn't really affect the final outcome regardless.
Okay.
Because it's because the way the Electoral College is set up, it's so heavily weighted on a win where there's such a large margin that one or two electorals don't make sense
Right,
to
right, right.
impact
Yeah.
that final number. So I'm not saying the founding fathers anticipated the possibility of like presidential candidates elect getting killed,
Yeah.
but it does create an interesting safeguards in regarding that stuff because one of the things that John Adams in particular was concerned about was a tyrannical president, and hence. They put a lot of power into the legislature, which I criticize over the last century. The legislature keeps ceding power back to the president more so than they really should. But that's kind of a political philosophy argument about legislative bodies. But if you look at the Constitution, it's heavily weighted inside the legislature, and you've heard me say this more than once. The legislature legislates. The executive branch executes, and it
Right.
executes what the legislature is asked, well, not asking, telling them what to do by law.
Well, that's here at the state level too. Yeah.
That is correct, and
Yeah.
actually on the council level as well.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah, there's the mayor's the executive branch and the council's legislative, right?
And when the count if the legislature if the executive branch defies the legislative branch, we have things like impeachment and other tools, but we also have the ability to address funding issues, as well as constantly setting up new laws,
Right.
see how long they're going to keep defying the legislature. And
Yeah.
I mean, we can name some instances actually that's happened in the last 5 years on both the city level and at my level and at the federal level.
So does the weight of the Electoral College change based on the changes in the population of the state?
Yes, it changes population state on a national level. So certain states will gain Congress people and some will lose Congress people,
Right.
and it shifts the Electoral College importance. So Massachusetts, you may remember, for those old enough, at one time had 12 congressmen.
I remember 10, so I didn't know it went up to 12. Yeah.
Yeah, it was at one time 12, which is down to 9.
It's yeah, right. 9 now. Yeah.
So our electoral weight has shifted down over years.
Yes.
Not like it's not important, but it has shifted down.
Yeah.
And believe it or not, we're still a mid-sized state despite having 9 congressmen and 2 senators for a total of 11. We're actually considered a mid-sized electoral state.
Oh,
We're
really?
far from like 3, like
Interesting.
Vermont,
Yeah.
because that's the minimum, 3.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So, yeah, population of Massachusetts, what, about 6 million, something like that?
Yeah, we're just about 7 million,
7
actually.
million.
Yeah, so, but I mean, we didn't lose any congresspeople because we actually maintain a level number of population. We actually grew just enough to make sure we didn't lose anyone.
I see.
Remember in 2020, we also didn't have the college students here.
Oh, true. That's right. Everybody was remote. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's people at the census in the state on April of that year. Oh, the census count is what counts as a resident, not a citizen, not a temporary resident. Physical human being in your state is counted. And yeah, we get about 50,000 students a year.
Yeah, it's significant.
And that's significant. Say 50,000 students, give or take, a few thousand come and go from Massachusetts every May and every September. So for the purpose of census count, it's very, very important for our state. That students are counted as part of Massachusetts residents for the purposes of the U.S. Census. So that's basically, in a nutshell, why we have the Electoral College, why we don't have just straight up popular vote. And to put in perspective, right, back to the original 13 states, the popular vote, as it was popular vote, if slaves were considered people, full people, the southern states would win all the time.
Yeah, sure.
It's
Because
like,
if they had more population, then yeah.
yeah, they if it was straight up popular vote, even though slaves couldn't vote, you would still control the Congress, right? I'm sorry, let me invert that. That's wrong. Back up. The Congress would be controlled by southern states if slaves were considered full people.
Yes, yep.
The
Yeah.
northern states would always win the popular vote for president because slaves weren't full people, and slaves couldn't vote.
Gotcha. Okay.
And women couldn't vote. People forget that part. So again, only white Protestant male landholders.
Yeah.
There's more white Protestant male landholders in northern states than there are in southern states.
Just based on how the country was founded, populated, yeah.
That's correct,
Yeah.
because you have giant plantation owners.
Right.
But you get the smallest states, you have smaller farms.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, I just think it's important to talk about this at this time, because I heard a lot of folks poo-poo the Electoral College, and talk about what about the popular vote as opposed to the electoral vote. And I think it's confusing for a lot of people.
Yeah, because if you took the colonial era, if slaves were considered people at the time, for the purposes of a congressional count in the census, Congress would be 100% controlled by southern
By
states
southern
with the
states, yeah.
Balancing Act of the Senate, but the northern states would control the president.
Right.
And if you look at the way the population is set up in this country, not surprising, people lived by water. All through human history, people live near water because water brings life, right? It's
Right.
not
Yeah.
complicated. So anywhere there's a major water source, you find populations. So the coastlines, everywhere near major rivers, everywhere near a freshwater lake, you will find major population centers.
Yeah, that's
And a
where the big
popular,
cities are mostly, yeah.
yeah, and the popular vote will shift. If we do a popular vote for a natural election, those big centers would have greater say
Yeah.
on how the president will would be, because those population centers would actually control and make negligible lower population centers.
Right, exactly. So in that case, those folks in the sparsely areas really would vote wouldn't count.
That's correct. And
Yeah.
also would negatively impact ethnic minorities.
Yes.
So, in other countries where you have straight up popular vote, ethnic minorities and other smaller political parties and are basically pushed to the sidelines, even though you have parliamentary systems where you can have small political parties win. The reality is they get pushed to the side. The Electoral College sometimes creates concentrations of a popular vote. today there's actually a movement to have states require that the Electoral College membership has to vote for the state candidate, the candidate, presidential candidate won that state. So, for example, Massachusetts tends to be Democrat almost all the time. So the Electoral College in Massachusetts, this movement required Massachusetts at those Electoral College candidates must vote for the Democratic candidate. So we're actually one of the states that did pass a resolution to have our Electoral College membership vote with the popular vote in our state. And there's a movement around the country to try to have states do this and see if they can reach a critical mass of the majority of Electoral College members. Not surprising, the Democratic states have moved on this in the big population centers. However, that's far from reaching a majority Electoral College. And the highest resistance, not surprising, is the small states who see this as a threat to their ability to maintain a voice in the presidency in the Electoral College system. So there's this whole movement going around the country to do that. That way, it guarantees that there's no rogue agents in the Electoral College. And then there's a other one that's a popular vote movement. So the other one that's movement that's going on is that the states that will have passed a resolution to mandate that their state's Electoral College must vote for the popular vote, regardless of what the state does.
How are the electors chosen? The members of the college, how are they chosen?
Interesting enough, it's chosen by the state party.
Okay, I thought so. Yeah.
So the Democratic State Party would choose the electors. They would go, after during the process in December prior to certification of votes, Secretary of State already circulated certified votes in Massachusetts. The electors would go to the State House, and Secretary Gallo would be in charge of conducting the convening of the electors, which I've never observed. I have no interest in observing with you, but it is actually a public thing. And Secretary is in charge of swearing in the electors and giving instructions. And since he's in charge of convening, he could do whatever he wants regarding how long he wants to talk.
And are they just regular citizens, or are they elected officials already in some other capacity?
Can be anybody that the state party decides.
All right.
Whatever process the state party goes through.
Interesting. Okay. All righty. Thank you, Professor Chan, for that. That's interesting.
Yeah, and like I said, there's movements around the country, by national groups trying to force states to go to the popular vote as opposed to the vote in their own state's electors. I mean, their own states. So, like, if Republican wins the popular vote, even though we went Democrat in Massachusetts, there's a movement to say that our electoral votes has to go with the popular vote, which is the Republican one, even though we were Democrat. You can see where that becomes a problem for not just the state, but the people living in that state.
Yes, there may be just protests in the streets at
Well,
that
you want the vote really not to be counted. I mean,
point.
that really takes it to the next level. But this is a real thing. This is a real movement.
It's interesting. Hey, let's talk about something completely different. Daylight savings time's coming to an end.
Oh, thank God, it isn't ballot questions.
I wasn't going to go there. We've done enough on the ballot questions.
We talked way too much about ballot questions. Yeah, daylight savings time is this Sunday. We fall back because that's how you remember. You fall back, you spring ahead, and you get your hour of sleep more, but the sun sets at 4.
I know, I hate that.
So, vitamin D opportunities, take full advantage of it. Seasonal depression is kind of a real thing, depending on who you ask, but I think it is. And we don't generate vitamin D and vitamin C naturally in our bodies easily. You have to have it introduced. So drink milk if you can.
Unless you're lactose intolerant,
Take vitamin D or get a little extra sunlight during the wintertime. But yeah, remind everybody to shift your clocks back an hour and plan your day on Sunday accordingly.
That's
And
right.
yeah, but you might be a little bit more rested.
There is a national movement that's been going on for years and years and years to keep daylight saving time permanent, I know.
Well, there is a special commission we formed on this at the state level, which
Oh, really?
my colleague Dan Cahill from Lynn, I believe, is chairing that. He's actually the current chair of Natural Resources. And my departing friend, Sue Moran, I believe, was the co-chair of that. She's going to be the Barnstable Clerk of Courts. She's a senator from Plymouth and Barnstable. And I get it, but it's kind of weird because not every country, there's also a country component. Every country follows daylight savings. Every
Yeah.
country has own time zone issues. For example, China doesn't have time zones. It's just one time throughout the country.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't realize this until my China trip in 2017 with the delegation that Ron led. Because we went from Beijing to Chengdu, which is the far eastern side of that country. And the sun was setting at like 3:30.
Yeah, I was gonna say, China's an enormous country. Wow.
Yeah, we're like, wow, the sun sets really early. It just dawned on us. We never had a change of watches.
Huh.
So, yeah, I kind of get it. I mean, I kind of don't. I mean, it's easier if we had one time zone. Daylight saving time principle is that the idea is that you get more daylight. There's energy efficiency savings now because you don't use the lights on as much. The idea of better vitamin D, productivity. I mean, there's all kinds of. You name the rationale regarding the benefits of daylight. I'm sure it's out there.
Right.
But I mean, we're talking about big states or small states. Rural areas have a whole different issue regarding daylight savings because they're agricultural areas, right? So th that's a
Yeah, but
different
you can't have it
conversation.
on a state-by-state basis. That would be chaotic.
There is actually some pockets.
Oh, where they don't change. Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah.
if you look at the map, you see these wee little carve outs too regarding central versus. Mountain time in particular. And don't forget, daylight saving times also had an issue regarding railroads.
Yes, that's true too. Yeah.
The time zones set up a uniform time structure for each region so the trains ran on time.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't think of that because it's traveling. They're traveling between time zones and states. Yeah.
Because people used to tell time by the sun, and since the sun moves differently versus where you are, your watch may not be equivalent of the watch that's on the train.
Yes, right. That's why you always see conductors with the pocket watches, right? Yeah.
Yeah, but they can reset the watch once they move to certain time zones.
Yeah.
There's a lot of reasons why we have what we have. It's just people don't really think about something as simple as trains. And it makes a big difference because if you have everyone in a uniform time zone, the train does indeed run on time.
Yes. Just not in your time zone.
Thank God the MBTA does not cross time zones. Otherwise,
No, they have enough trouble in their own time zone.
they have enough trouble. So, the arguments, on permanent day saving time is largely driven by modern arguments, obviously, because a bygone of decades ago, arguments don't hold today because times have changed. But does it really help us or not? I think, it takes away some confusion. We remember daylight savings got moved up 3 weeks. Normally, it's actually earlier.
That's right. Yep, that's right.
Should have happened like mid-October,
Yes.
not into November. But I mean, realistically, I mean, our day-to-day lives, you and me, some of us will argue, yeah, it makes a difference. But I'm going to tell you, the vast majority of us probably say no.
Yeah, interesting. So in the short term anyway, it's a good opportunity to remind folks to check the batteries in your smoke detectors too.
Smoke detectors and carbon monoxide detectors,
Yes, very
and
important.
you may have those that are plugged into the wall, which are great,
Yep.
but they have a make sure the backup battery in those are functioning as well. And don't forget carbon monoxide detectors and smoke detectors do expire.
Yes, absolutely. I think they have a 10-year lifespan or something.
Yeah, my carbon monoxide smoke detector combo actually will make a lot of noise. Then you'll have a display go on, say, replace me, essentially.
Yep.
It's actually quite nice. It tells me what to do. I
Yeah,
like
it's
that.
really very, very important. They're life-saving devices, and they're relatively inexpensive for the benefit that you get from them.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, for personal fire safety, I mean, sadly, there was a fire regarding the possibility of someone burning incense near their bed, things like that. You have open flame in your home, definitely. Be careful with that, would be candles or incense, or you're smoking. You don't want take the risk, particularly if you fall asleep. Make sure everything is blown out before you go to bed. Same thing on your electrical appliances. Do not use exposed wires. Just saying, things could happen. And obviously, check your stoves.
And your heating systems this time of year too.
Yeah, if you need a heating system maintenance, I mean, I generally like to do that during the summertime because, people are more available. But yeah, if you have a fireplace, make sure the chute is clean. You should hopefully clean out the chutes. And if you're oil burning, definitely, you definitely want to have higher efficiency in your oil burning by cleaning out the interior. Your heat pumps or gas, I mean, the maintenance levels is different from oil. So definitely want to do that. And don't burn your leaves, please.
Yes, especially now, so dry.
Very dry, and leaf burning is not legal. I don't believe it's legal in the fall. I think you can do some in the spring.
I don't know in Quincy if it's ever legal, actually.
Yeah, maybe it is. I don't think it's legal in Quincy here because I know there's some like weird rules everywhere you go.
There are. I know down the Cape there's a certain period where you can, and out west, I think, but in the urban areas, not. I don't think so.
I was just talking before the call. My mom had a party over her friends. I finally got to start the fire pit for the first time this year. But make sure that the flames go out. And you're right, it leaves are wicked dry right now. So any sparks, on a dry lawn, dry leaves, and dry tree and dry bark, it can create some fire. So make sure you put the grid on top and smother your fires correctly. Because as we talk now, there's currently is burning forest fires in Massachusetts.
Absolutely, not too far either. On the Blue Hills, there was a small one earlier this week, so
Yeah, and if you watch the evening news, when I was watching Channel 5 last night, they had the helicopter up and you could see the embers burning and the fires burning on the North Shore.
So that is our public service announcement for Techie Talk today.
Yeah, no, be yeah, no, please be very cognizant of fire hazards, especially in this very, very dry weather.
Absolutely. So next time we talk, the election will be over, so we'll have to find something else to talk about.
Well, we don't need to talk about politics after the election is over. You don't have to talk about ballot question results, or you don't have to talk about presidential results.
There'll be plenty to talk about, yes.
Well, we do have a few elected races we're watching carefully. I mean, we have that Barnstable Plymouth District state Senate seat that's available. That has gone Democrat, Republican, Democrat, Republican, so it's not unusual. We have the Taunton to, I think it's Taunton to Fall River, New Bedford. You'd see Mark Pacheco's seat that's open. We're watching my good friend John Cronin, who's the co-chair of my committee, which is Fitchburg to Leominster, that region up in the Merrimack Valley. We're watching the Mansfield race for state rep. Jay Barrows, a Republican, long time retired. It became an open seat that there's a distinct possibility it could flip Democrat in the presidential cycle. What else are we kind of watching? We're watching the Scarsdale seat, which is in Groton. Groton historically is a Democratic, I'm sorry, Republican seat, Groton area. So that could go either way. So we're looking at that as well. Newburyport is another place that can flip back and forth. It's been known to be Democrat, Republican, Democrat, Republican. That's another seat we're kind of all watching to see how that plays out in the final. Nothing interesting in the county level on these seats. I don't believe the congressional delegation is in any kind of danger on that day.
And of course,
So
the
we're,
Senate race too.
yeah, I don't see a major danger in the Senate race. It would actually be for personal reasons, completely selfish reasons, to let you all know. I do are intrigued regarding my vote totals versus the congressional candidates. I'm always intrigued about where I fit in that tier of votes between me and like Congressman Lynch and Senator Warren and so forth. So on a personal level, I like to see how this stacks up on a personal level. Yeah, I mean, even on the state delegation races, as you can tell, there isn't many, but there are enough contested races that we're kind of watching closely. Some folks get races regularly, like my good friend Natalie Higgins gets one on a regular basis. So, and those are actually very contested races, but she always won. So, but watching on our level, as you can tell, I'm paying some attention, not just in national politics, everyone, but also stuff happening in the state house.
Okay, well, we'll talk about that next week.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is it, Tacky. Your time to shine.
Oh yeah, phone number time. So, if you call me, just to remind people, the office is not my office. The office is controlled by the Joint Committee of Economic Development and Emerging Technologies with Jared Parasella. We're still trying to figure out how to change the phone system props because I asked the staff to call in to find out if we can do this. So 617-722-2370, 617-722-2370. If the reception person is unable to pick up the phone timely, please wait for the prompts. It will get to me eventually. It's more than one of us sharing the suite, but I do not control the suite. So 617-722-2370, the State House, room 42. We are there. We are staff. You know, if you're going to come visit or you want to do a tour or something, you know, let us know. We're happy to try to help. My email, tacky.can@mahouse.gov, tacky.chan at mahouse.gov. I do actually see all my emails. And we do prioritize emails based on constituent services first. In case you're wondering, unemployment claims have spiked on emails this week. Mind you, it's not a huge spike. I mean, it's not like I get 10,000 of these, but you know, if I get like five a week, that's an indication something's happened. We do have Facebook, State Representative Tacky Chan Facebook. So State Representative Tacky Chan Facebook, you can see some pictures of me and where I've been. Same thing on X at Tacky Chan. We do the same thing there. We have tackychan.org, it's our reference page and also a contact page. And of course, we have the malegislature.gov. You don't need me to watch sessions. You don't need me to find a bill. You can find it on malegislature.gov. Just search and you'll come up. And if you're looking for another legislator, I mean, that's how you can find that as well. And this time of year, where do I vote MA? Is a very important website to confirm your voter registration, but also make sure your ballot was received if you mail in your ballot. And of course, we're here with QATV of Joe here, and you know, watch QATV or listen to it on election night, and catch me in the morning, and you know, we'll be with you every week or 2 weeks as time allows.
Sounds good, Techie. We'll talk to you in November.
I'll see you in November.